When the door opens, as somebody said earlier, walk through that door if it seems potentially reasonable. When you're looking for that, when you're graduating, don't think of looking for your first job. You're looking for your first position in your career. And think about it as the start. And it's just unbelievable amount of fun. Enjoy the excitement of the future.
Got a chance to go south again, South Carolina, with Medical University of South Carolina. They were having their white coat ceremony, and for some reason asked me to be the keynote speaker. I know, I was as confused as you. While in town, we decided to do a live show with some faculty and students at MUSC, and it sounded a little something like this. First round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow, restriction, rehabilitation training, and the equipment you need to apply. Check out OwensRecoveryScience.com for info and the schedule.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pintcast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
All right, we've gone south for this episode of PT Pintcast. We're at Medical University of South Carolina. MUSC, you ready to introduce this guy? Here we go. Our next guest, professor and chair, Department of Health Profession at the Medical University of South Carolina, an adjunct professor of biomedical engineering and physical therapy at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, an adjunct associate professor of physical therapy at Emory University, Rick Siegel. How many schools do you work for?
It's a huge list.
Yeah.
I have done a lot.
You do a lot.
Yeah, I have. I'm tired.
You look. Rick was like, "I'm really shy," and I'm like, "You don't seem shy." Before we started talking, so I can tell. So wearing multiple hats, you're teaching different things at different programs. Describe briefly what you do at each, or what you get to do.
Well, right now I don't do anything for UNC. Our assistive technology course is dead. So Sarah and I was at UNC and NC State, and we did an assistive technology course for PTs and for biomedical engineers and got them together. And Sarah actually taught in that when I moved here. That is on hold, so I don't do anything there now. Emory is just a name. That's where I was for 22 years.
Yeah.
So I'm probably the longest standing member of the APTA in this room for sure.
Yeah.
I've been a member of the APTA for 44 years.
Thank you for your membership for that long. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've probably done a couple of CSMs.
I have done a couple of CSMs.
Yeah.
So here I've started teaching neuroscience, but my department is a bunch of different programs. But I have done everything in physical therapy. So I've been in the NICU.
Wow.
I've done wound care, including genitalia.
Yeah, good stuff.
I was literally hired to do that.
That was a job posting?
That was a job. That's why they hired me.
What is the job? How does that written? Because you know I'm not going to skip over that.
So they didn't put it in the job posting, but it was at a school, at a hospital near where you went to school. I was at George Washington University.
Yeah.
They needed a guy. And when I went there, I did cardiopulmonary, and then I didn't really enjoy that as much. So a local hospital had a rash of burns in that area, and they needed a guy. And so they recruited me to do that. And
kid in the front row is losing it.
But the best thing about that job, which is what I hope you all look for in your career positions, was that group of therapists were evidence-based therapists. So it was the first place where we actually started having patients. We did journal clubs about the issues with them, and it had nothing to do with my wound care.
Yeah.
But that's where I got into, I was always a neuro person and a peds person, but this is where I really got into the continuum of care, going from ICU all the way to home health. So doing a little debridement got me that opportunity.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture like what was actually written in the job description, and then you get there and they're first in, they're like, "So about that description.
What will you do with these forces?"
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Haven't had someone talk about that on the show in a while, but I'm glad you brought it up. So So one of your passions is changing practice among students or young clinicians through problem solving. How do you bring that in, or how do you expose them to that to get to think differently?
Well, I'm still working on it with the students here. This is, but really to make them actually try to understand the science behind things. And when they're thinking about the science, think about, and I'm still working on that, how to have that be translated into practice. So as you've heard from the others, so this, I'm getting serious.
Get serious.
My big passion, and so I'm on the board of the what's called ACAP, the American Council of Academic Physical Therapy. I'm so old, I was one of the founders of this thing. And I was the liaison to an education research task force. And what that brought me to think about was, how can we use education of students to get research out into practice? I think the residency program is fantastic. It's a great way to get it started. But you all sitting in the audience are really the way we're going to change practice, because there's thousands of you that graduate every year. And if we can get them to be people that are understanding of research, and then thinking and having exposure through a lot of the work like Mark Bowden and Sarah do and so forth, to actually try to implement that in practice, we'll have thousands of people trying to change practice.
Well, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard to get people to read research? I mean, a lot of it's super interesting.
Right. It is. It's how do you get them to do it? Is to somehow put out there, how will this research show them a demonstration of change in patient outcomes? So I've been involved with, although much less now, with something called operant conditioning, which really was an animal model.
Risk reward, right?
Yeah, risk reward. And a colleague of mine, Steve Wolf at Emory, and he and I were the first people to do this in humans, but really with the intent of changing how people move. And so we were okay with showing some of that, but someone here named Iko Thompson, who's a faculty member here, actually showed some change in patients with this, with spinal cord injury. So you have to get that continuum, but just a hope, and that will get students, I hope. Will you read those kind of articles if you think it's going to make a difference? Yeah, see? So that's how you do it.
I feel like YouTube videos or like rap songs or GIFs might be better.
Well, why not?
Could you make your research into a GIF?
Absolutely. Why not? I'll do that.
I will do anything. This guy will do
anything.
We know that already. We are well aware. We are briefed.
I will. It's true.
We're working with other professionals, with other professions outside of just the silo of physical therapy. That's a passion of yours. Talk about that.
Well, so I'm also a neurobiologist. So I'm connected to people that are basic scientists. I'm also involved in trying to transform engineers. So of course, Jesse's sitting in the back, Jesse Dean, who does a great job with this, but I like to plug everybody. But I'm actually part of a grant that is designed to get quantitative scientists to understand rehab. So we mentor them on principles related to rehabilitation, and that's one way to collaborate. With Mark, we're involved. We have a center here to try to integrate rehabilitation principles into people that are doing brain stimulation and things like that. So I think you have to engage scientists and also tell them, hey, almost everything people do can actually affect rehab. Even affecting mental health.
And the other way around, right? Rehab can affect,
mental health.
If everybody is, if we're at least at the table, and I think we're starting to be, at least at the table, especially when you have physical therapists with MPHs, and they're starting to be in hospital systems and trying to show value, and just got to be in the room. And I think we're starting to get there, and that's a good idea.
We are at the table.
Yeah, that's great. What else is a passion for you? What do you love?
My grandson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggie right now. But I love physical activity, believe it or not, when I'm not wearing a neck brace.
Hold on a second. Rewind that one. What happened?
Now I just have it, the students that are now second years made my neck feel bad. Just kidding. No, it's actually related to Kiawah Island here. I was playing golf there, and also my neck started bothering me 24 years ago. No, so I am very passionate about my family. And I'm very passionate about protecting the environment. I'm a turtle patrol person.
Oh, yeah.
I protect loggerhead turtles.
You're out there with the flashlights? And
No lights.
No lights. Sorry, no light.
opposite of lights. My biggest passion really is I want to make a mark. You know, my parting comment to them also really is I want to make a mark in patient care. And I calculate, I'm an idiot, I guess, but I calculate yearly how many people with stroke or spinal cord injury have I potentially impacted by training students. And it's approaching, I think, 20,000 or so for stroke and maybe 5,000 for spinal cord
injury. In a year?
Overall, from the students that
How do you calculate that?
Well, I calculate the students I've trained
right. And
the ones that I know have gone into neuro. And I figure what a patient load would be, and that's my calculation.
Wow.
It's probably weirdly off, but that's okay.
That's a normal thing to calculate. I'm sure a lot
but
of professors
But I think that's important.
Yeah,
think we need to leave our mark.
Well, how far can your reach actually go as an educator, as a therapist? You know,
I think it can go very far. Yeah. I mean, if some of these students become clinical educators or faculty, one of the cool things about MUSC, you want to say what's a distinctive thing is, for example, Sarah's a perfect example of this, where we have people that are faculty members that really came from the clinic. They really know the clinic, but they have this academic mind. And so we're fortunate to have people like Sarah and Gretchen Seif, who's out here. And they're the people that can inspire people to be that big reach.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. We have to have the students be the reach.
I like it. Last thing I want to talk about, we talked about interprofessional collaboration, but how about collaboration between PT programs? So in the same field, but different programs.
So I'm definitely counter to a lot of people, maybe. When we actually started this ACAP, when we were starting to form it, we had talked about having consortia of programs. So, for example, I came here from UNC, and there are programs out in rural areas like Western Carolina. They had strengths in areas that we did not have at Chapel Hill. And why not have consortium of programs to put the strengths together of these different programs for the betterment of patients, and also so students get the top-notch teaching
sure.
in everything. And, you know, people worry about program growth and so forth. Why not think about what are strengths and see how we can do some collaboration among programs?
Yeah. Are you ready for your parting shot?
Yeah.
This is The Parting Shot.
Brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. The Brooks IHL hosting their third annual scholarly symposium. That's on May 19th in Jacksonville, Florida. Chad Cook is the keynote speaker. The day is filled with evidence-based scholarly activities. You do not want to miss it. Register today at brooksihl.org.
What's your mic drop moment? What does everybody need to hold near and dear to their heart?
Well, I think they've all really said it, but I think really be open for anything. That's been the way I have been. I started out as a florist, and then as...
What was not in your bio? That was not in your bio.
And then I was an Asian history major before PT school.
Yep.
And opportunity knocks. And I got a chance to teach anatomy as an undergraduate. So when the door opens, as somebody said earlier, walk through that door if it seems potentially reasonable. And if you walk in, it's not quite right, walk out. But be open to that. And this is, I'll be serious, because when I do exit interviews, one of the things I try to instill, particularly in OT and PT students, is when you're looking for that, when you're graduating, don't think of looking for your first job. You're looking for your first position in your career. And think about it as the start. And it's just unbelievable amount of fun. And we are four here right now have had a blast. And so enjoy the excitement of the future.
Rick Siegel.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
Like craft beer for your ears.
This is the PT Pinecast.
The show is brought to you by Aureus Medical Staffing. Quite simply, I could talk on and on about Aureus, and I do on the show, because they've supported us from the start. But what Aureus does is they find you a job wherever you want to go. They've got placements, jobs for PTs in all 50 states. That's how many there are, right? 50? Right. 50 states in all settings. So where do you want to go? Check out where their jobs are. Talk to a recruiter. And again, want to make sure you know, this doesn't cost you, the PT, anything. All right? You just get to go do the thing you want to do, treat patients, where you want to do it, and get paid for it. Aureus is just the person to make that happen. AURUSmedical.com. That is where you can find them. Talk to a recruiter there. Paid travel and housing, benefits go with it. Again, positions in all 50 states, a variety of settings. Go here, try this. Don't like the area? Go somewhere else. Short and long-term assignments, even Con Ed money. You can travel from position to position or take some time off in between. Listen, you put a lot of work into becoming a physical therapist. Do it on your terms now. Travel the country getting paid to be a PT. AURUSmedical.com.
Back. Let's get back to the show.
All right, welcoming one of your own students to the stage. Let's hear for him. James Newman, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
All right, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a third year here. I've had the pleasure of representing everybody. The second year has asked me to come up and do this.
So no pressure at all.
Yeah, no, I'm not nervous at all. No, but that was really kind of him, and
you have to follow genital debridement, so.
I think I get the pleasure of following that.
Pleasure
of
following. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's easier or harder. I have no idea. I'm just over here. So you do something besides just being a student. You're kind of doing a little bit something more above and beyond.
Yeah, this past year at NSC in Portland, Oregon, I went out with the intent to run for the Student Assembly Board of Directors, and fortunately had a great crew of first years and my own class behind me at the time when we were second years, and they really lifted me up and gave me the confidence to go out there and broadcast myself and put my worth out there, and fortunate enough to be the nominating committee chair elect for the Student Assembly Board.
Let's hear for that. Winning's awesome, so congratulations, but even just trying it is a way to putting yourself out there. That's got to be scary, right? I mean, you're essentially saying, yeah, I can do this job, and then you've got to, you know, get the rest of the country to kind of get behind you in terms of PT students.
Yeah, I'm not sure I did that right.
All right.
I didn't really go in there with the thought process of, yes, I can do this. I went in there with the thought process of, I have something to give, and I need to figure out what that is.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Because I knew nothing going in.
Yeah, that's
really.
What did we just learn? Just walk through the door, man. Yeah. What's the worst that could happen? What do you want to accomplish now that you're, you know, essentially able to, you know, affect, you know, just not just the students in the room, but students across the country? What are you looking to move the needle on?
Yeah, I think when I get done, and fortunately mine's a 2-year position, so I'll be in doing this next year as well as a student and my first part as a clinician. I think I'll consider this a big time win for me. You know, it's already a big time win as far as personal growth is concerned. I mean, there are enormous amounts of effort and time are going into this, and I know as a person, as a future therapist, as a person who cares about others, I've grown astronomically. And then I think it'll be a huge win for me if I can touch the lives of every student I come into, I can learn from every clinician I network with, and I can be a part of a change for the better as students come through and graduate and learn more about what's available to
That's
them.
That's fantastic. Calculate that change. Write it down.
I'll get with
Write it down.
Dr. Siegel about that later, and we'll figure out the math.
Why should a student, you know, maybe you don't have to run for an office like that, but why should a student just get involved and stay involved after they graduate? That's the big one, right?
And that's a great point. We talk about that a lot on the board. I mean, my board members and I, you know, when we decide to get serious and stop goofing around a little bit, you know,
yeah.
We talk about how it doesn't take a title to be a leader. You don't have to have a position. You don't have to be a board member, a core ambassador, a project committee person. You just need to get out there and give everything you have all the time. And people are going to follow you as long as you start doing things the right way.
Sure.
So for us and for us as students, it's hard to step into that position. It's hard to want to be a leader because none of us feel ready. And I would assume a lot of the faculty here could attest to, you probably never feel ready. I still don't feel ready. I'm almost a year into this position, and I'm learning something every day.
Good. That's a great position. You never want to be the smartest guy in the room. Super boring room.
I don't think I have to worry about that.
Yeah, okay, me either. I never. Last thing I wanted to ask you, what makes MUSC the best? What makes MUSC great? What about it really, really you know, inspires you to be here?
So I went through the interview process like a lot of other students in here, I'm assuming. I went to some great schools. I met some great faculty. I had the pleasure of meeting Sharon Dunn on my first interview. Dr. Dunn, she's amazing. Unbelievable.
Good plug. I like it.
But when I came here, First off, they don't do an interview process here, which is kind of sad. I think we should interview people. But, I mean, that's just my personal thing.
He's trying to affect policy right now.
Yeah, right here, right now. The provost is here. I mean, great opportunity.
Give it a shot.
So what drew me in as a student when I got here, first off, was the level of involvement I saw within the organization itself. I mean, meeting Dr. Slad and meeting Dr. Seif, you know, the former president of the of SCAFTA is Dr. Seif. Obviously, Dr. Sladen is the vice president of the APTA. Dr. Embry is the current president of SCAFTA, and just various levels of involvement. I took a chance and went to a conference in Boston thinking I was just going to go explore Boston the whole time. The faculty told me, you can't just go explore Boston if you want to get reimbursed for this. I said, okay, I'll go to a couple things here and there. We ended up sneaking backstage and meeting the keynote speaker, and whatever, it's fine.
It's good.
Worked out well. But they really have set a mark out there for everybody, because I don't go to a conference ever and say a name like Sarah Kraft, say a name like Lisa Ladd, say a name like Reza Saif, and anybody else in this faculty, and eyes around the room don't light up, ears don't start twitching and burning, and then come up and ask me, how are they? How are they doing? They've done this and that, and I can't wait to get back there and see them and everything else that goes with that. So the first thing was the involvement and the energy they bring. And the second thing, which might be the biggest thing that I've noticed talking to other students across the country, because, I mean, that's a great part of this whole position is networking and going out and talking to people, is they don't just prepare you for an exam here. It's not about passing the boards. It's not about cramming you full of information, getting you out there, being a clinician, and then worrying about everything else as it comes. I didn't know what mental fatigue really was until I took a Sarah Kraft neuro exam. I promise you. I didn't understand.
Sarah's got this awesome smile, like, yeah, success.
You sit for your first neuromuscular one exam. First off, they tell us when we first walk in the door, every test is going to be multiple choice. And then the first question on there is two short answer questions, and I'm like, no, you can't do this. That's you told us this wasn't going to happen. So you get to about question 38, and you're sitting there like, how many more questions do I have? You scroll to the bottom, you're kind of looking through, looking at how long the questions are, and you're like, I have 50 more questions to do.
Ouch.
I need a nap. I need something, anything. A shot, maybe.
Can't hurt.
But that's because with all the tests and all the questions and all the classes and everything, they keep us interactive, they keep us on our toes, and it's about clinical reasoning. It's about preparing you to be a great clinician, not preparing you to be the person who can pass a board exam.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's hear for that. So no pressure. Yours is the last parting shot. So what words would you want to leave with the audience in the room and out on the internet?
Yeah, so fortunately I get to go last, so I got to think about this the whole time. You know when they tell you to do like something unique about yourself in the room, and you're like, please let me go last. I need to think about this for a little bit. I can fit 14 gumballs in my mouth or something like that, right? My parting gift, and hopefully this is unique to the students, is a lot of clinicians that you talk to talk about burnout, and a lot of fresh PTs will talk about burnout and tell you they're not sure if they want to do this after a while. Maybe it's switching setting. Maybe it's what it is. But a lot of them have forgotten what it's like to be a student and feel that. And I would say, and not only say, I would challenge every student across the country to embrace that and realize that if you feel a burnout in school, there are so many other doors open to you, because we have so much open to us as students. We have such a unique opportunity to impact communities on more levels than just your academic abilities. We all set goals. Most of us are type A people. We want to do this, we want to be 4.0 students, we want to be perfect. Well, sometimes helping the community and volunteering is more important than getting 100 on that test. Sometimes working at the pro bono clinic that's available to you is more important than studying that extra 2 hours for that exam. Put yourself out there and don't just worry about school all the time.
James Newman.
Like what you hear? Tell a friend or leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. This is the PT Pinecast.
So now is the opportunity for you guys to ask any question that you want. May or may not be about genital debridement of the panel. Is there anything that you've been burning to know? So you can ask a question about a specific person on stage, or you can just kind of throw a general question out there you've always wanted to know. So who's going to be the brave person to go first? I'm looking for that first one. Who's going to? There we go. Say it loud. So I'm going to repeat the question. So what other positions are available for the student assembly if a student might be interested?
That's a great question. It's something I had to learn when I got elected, because like I said, I basically knew nothing. which is great because that means anybody's the opportunity to learn. There are plenty of levels nationally. We have core ambassadors, we have project committees. There's the board that I'm on, which, quick plug, the applications just opened up yesterday. So if you're interested, please come contact me in some way, shape, or form. I'd love to talk to you about it. But as far as that's concerned, I mean, you need to look at your state level too, because not everybody has the drive or the time to work on that national level, and there's nothing wrong with that. You don't need that title to be that leader, but every state needs a certain level of infrastructure as well. When you work in student special interest groups, when you work on the level of advocacy, like I said before, there are tons of doors open for you. It's about finding out what they are and walking through all of them and sampling where your passion is, because it can be in multiple areas, but if you don't know what they are, it's hard to explore.
Yeah, APTA.org has a pretty good explanation for it there. I mean, there's a lot of different opportunities, and you'll find that one, and every once in a while you'll read it and be like, oh, that was written just for me. Because not everybody wants to be, you know, on that national level like you were talking about. But there's probably something that you can do, even if it's every once in a while. And getting involved is obviously, as we've heard, a pretty big theme with everybody on stage. What do you want to know? It's a burning desire. Yeah, how do you balance in practice and research, doing both? You got a great question to ask with this particular panel too.
I started out doing clinical research and then went and learned how to do it. All right, so went and got a PhD, figured out how to ask the right questions, how to be able to learn those things. What I was really interested in was, why do certain therapies work? You know, how do you break it down? And so when I was in grad school, I actually studied with somebody who was a biomedical engineer, because I needed a different kind of framework to be able to understand how to break things down. So I came here, got involved in a lot of different things, including non-invasive brain stimulation, how can we augment the nervous system, how can we do all of these things to be able to help people who maybe have just a little bit of neurologic ability. Well, then we started going to do these site visits for the residency. And I realized that a lot of the stuff that we're doing at a research level isn't necessarily what's going to be the next step of translation in the clinic. And so in an odd way, the residency experience really kind of changed my research career to start thinking about those things that are the next level that are going to happen in the clinic. And so from that standpoint, I feel really strongly about the fact that our research and the clinic experience are kind of tied together, because we're really trying to make the clinic perform better. All right. With that said, I still think all of these other areas of exploration and things that we're trying to discover are important, and it's going to be critical in the next 10 years to be able to do that. But we've got to figure out how to get the basic things in before we think about how to get the more involved things in.
And just having been a half-time research clinician and half-time clinician a long, long, long time ago, there's lots of different ways as a clinician to get involved in research. So if you're close to an academic health sciences center, oftentimes they're looking for clinicians to actually implement some of the research. So you can start off just as a part of your clinical work is to see the patients, but see the patients using a protocol. So you can get involved in the most minor way up until, you know, doing a PhD and getting it engaged in a more substantial way.
Can I say one more thing and then I'll pass it? And the other thing I will say, you got a lot of us that want to speak. My turn. Sheesh. No, just kidding. So when I was a clinician, working full-time as a clinician, I was interested in ultrasound mist therapy with some of y'all. So I did wound care too. And I actually like wound care too. I did do some debridement down there, but I didn't brag about it earlier. Anyway. but in Charleston, there was no ultrasound mist therapy. And so in order to get it here, we did a 20 subject pilot study with a wound care nurses who I partnered with, and we tried it, and I presented at CSM, and that was my first taste of doing any kind of research. And I was a full-time clinician working with this wound care nurse to collect that data and to get it presented. So it can be done, but I think as a starting clinician, you need to figure out what you're passionate about, because that will lead you to what you want, what your questions are, so that you get passionate about the research. And that's what you'll be more able to manage the two things if you find out what are you really curious about and let that lead you along the way.
So that's great advice. So, the same thing happened to me in a sense. So when I was the job that involved that other stuff, but I was getting into neuro, was I was really curious about how one of my patients, who I followed from the intensive care unit all the way through home health, how he changed. So I got interested in neuroplasticity. And I always retained my clinical interest, but I knew I had to go, and I'm very science-oriented, so I went and did a basic science degree, but never lost my connection to, you know, research, you know, to the clinic. And today, I think you have better opportunities than I had when I was curious and wanted to do research. And so two former students, one that was a student of ours at Emory, and one that was one of my students at UNC, they got involved at a medical center, and this is the Rehab, now it used to be called the Rehab Institute of Chicago. And what they did was they were clinicians there, they knew research went on, and so they got exposed to it, but they weren't at first carrying a load as a research clinician. They started to do that, and then they got mentored in two different directions. One, to stay more clinical, and the other one to actually now be an NIH-funded researcher, still seeing patients part of the time. So you have to look for the kind of atmosphere. And what we want to have happen here is that MUSC should be a place that's an academic health center, so that clinicians should be engaged in the academic mission, and that can involve research. And so look for those opportunities. So if you're interested in that, you need to work someplace where those kind of opportunities could present themselves down the road.
Find your passion and find a place that you can do it a little bit, and that will lead you to a lot if you want to keep going. Got time for one more. We have a question. Una más. Loud and proud.
So with the push for residencies and everything, what's your advice to students that are coming out of PT school? Should you go straight into residency?
I like that question. I'll repeat it. So with the big push for residencies in the profession, what would you recommend for students? And I like how you asked this, and there's several people on the panel who, started and run a residency. So good way to ask a loaded question. Thank you. That was awesome.
There's not one answer. So I'm going to say two different answers. So in our residency, we've had clinicians 20 years out of school. That's been our longest out of school. That's a long time. And then we've had new grads. So I've seen new grads 20 years, 3 years, 5 years, all kind of along the spectrum. I think either way you're okay. If you do it right out of school as a new grad, you have the opportunity to develop really good clinical skills with really good mentoring from day one. And so when you're developing your skills, you're developing them, your critical thinking skills, which are, I think, the hardest to develop from day one. The flip side of that is you may not have enough context as a new grad to understand everything yet. So if I'm talking about spinal cord injury and you haven't had a spinal cord injury patient that you've been responsible for, it's harder to apply and really critically think through that because you don't have that experience. So I think that you could go either way. You just have to make a decision as to which way works best for you. I do think that not waiting more than a couple years is best because it's real easy to develop bad clinical habits and clinical habits which don't lead to clinical reasoning, doing things because that's what's being done around you. So when you guys graduate from school, you're going to know a very little about a lot of things. So you're baby PTs, so you know a little bit of nothing, basically. We do our best, but there's so much to learn, right? So, and you forgot a lot of what we taught you in the beginning. We know that. So when you get out there, the draw is to do whatever you see people doing around you. And that may or may not be great therapy. It just depends on who's around you, who you surround yourself with, right? So the residency offers you a way to not get into that trap of just delivering care that everyone else is doing, but to really critically think about why I'm doing it, is it working, and what change do I need to make it work well? So I don't know if that answered your question.
So when I was a PT finishing up, this was 1995, I remember asking one of our professors, it's like, when is it all going to make sense? Like, when is it going to come together? And she said, typically it takes about 2 years. And I probably can't argue with that even this much later. And I think from an ideal standpoint, if somebody has enough clinical experience to know what they know and to know what they don't know, it makes them very receptive educationally in the residency. With that said, there's all kinds of financial problems with graduating from school, getting an income, starting to pay back student loans, and then taking a reduced salary, moving for a year, and that sort of thing, which is why that we developed our residency the way that we did. So people don't have to relocate, they don't have to quit their job, but they can do it with some experience also. So it can be a lot of different ways, and I think that Sarah really verbalized that well.
Reality has to come into play, and it depends, which I'm sure you get a lot in PT school. Well, it depends.
Depends on the patient.
I have to say gray area.
I said that once
that
or twice. That depends on the patient.
All right, I want to thank the ladies and gentlemen on stage right here for coming out. Can't thank the audience for taking some time out of your busy schedules, the friends and the family in the background. So thank you guys for listening. And this show will be on iTunes next week. So if you just go into the iTunes app or Google Play and you search for PT Pinecast, and you get to hear yourself clapping in the audience. And you're like, that's me. That was me. So thank you guys very much for coming out. We appreciate it.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
Establishing permanent access to orthopedic rehabilitative services in the country of Haiti through direct patient care and clinical training of its citizens. That is what Stand the Haiti Project is. Find out how you can help at StandHaitiProject.org.